You're listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration, a podcast dedicated to helping software executives stay on the cutting edge of sales and marketing in their industry. Let's get into the show.
Looking to grow your pipeline? Download the free SDR handbook from Operatix for insider tips and expert advice on how to launch, grow, and manage a successful sales development team. Head to operatix.net/SDR-handbook/ to download now.
Hi, welcome to B2B Revenue Acceleration. My name is Aurélien Moitier, and I'm here today with Pete Lorenko, VP of Marketing at IQ. How are you doing today, Pete?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Very, very good. As I said, you know, it's snowing here in London. So, you know, about 7 a.m. in the morning, making snowmen in the garden. Picking up the kid from school early, so trying to fit the day, be very productive in the few hours that we will have. When it's snow, everything is slow in the UK, unfortunately. But we're not here to talk about the weather. Today, we'll be speaking about the 30, 60, 90-day plan of a new marketing leader. But before we get started, it would be super good if you could give us a little bit of background about yourself and your company, IQ.
Yeah, so as mentioned, Pete Lorenko, I've been with IQ about 90 days. So this is timing-wise really good. So we can speak to kind of how I've approached it here.
Yeah.
IQ is a enterprise data protection company. So for the audience listening, this think of it in kind of three buckets. We help manage private data center environments. So environments like Nutanix and VMware. We help protect and back up public cloud and hybrid cloud environments. And we're recently launched the ability to pretty much back up any SaaS application globally, although we're in the early days of rolling that out. So if you want to learn more, reach out. I'm happy to talk. But, you know, background wise, I've been doing marketing in different marketing roles for almost 20 years now. It feels longer than that.
Yeah.
But I've been leading marketing teams, most recently at Alice, which is a B2B gifting company. I had leadership roles at Avid Technology, which is in the media space, so the media creation space. And obviously, I'm most recently at IQ. And then I've had earlier stops at Iron Mountain Digital, that got by HP. I had a little short stint at Demandware, which got acquired by Salesforce.com. And I started my career off at UMC Corp, which is a big tech company that got by Dell. So,
yeah. So 20 years of marketing. 90-day fresh in your new company, IQ.
Yeah. Now,
we want to speak about the 30, 60, 90 days. I do love 30, 60, 90 days plan. In fact, this is probably something that I would include in most of the interviewing I do, or what's left for me to do, which is really like a, you know, managerial role or, you know, marketing, sales, head of people type of role. So how did it go? You know, you've just completed the 90 days at IQ. What was your process? How did you go about it?
Yeah, so my original goal coming into my role at IQ, and really any role I try to step into now, is in those first kind of like 90 plus days, it's predominantly you have to understand what's working, what's not working, and kind of what are the biggest barriers that are going to prevent you or your team's ability to succeed long term. So that was, if I were to oversimplify what the top line goal for me in those first 9 days is, it was that. We could talk about kind of like how I translate it from there. But from there, with that as like the centralized goal, there are key kind of like deliverables I work against. So one is I try to understand through conversations, talking with customers, et cetera, where do I believe the quick wins are that allows me to lay the foundation for scalable long-term growth. And we could talk about how we do that later. I want to focus on meeting the team in the early days, trying to understand those barriers I mentioned, what do they believe is working? What do they believe is not working? And then really my focus is how do I execute those hypotheses, if you will, those quick wins, so I can build trust and credibility across the org that enables me to sort of like with someone like yourself say, hey, boss, I want to start doing these things. Here's what we've done so far. Here's the results. Here's the learnings. Now my hypothesis is X. Can we go and start investing time or resources into that? So really, in its overly simplified version, I would say that's how I would summarize it. And then we can kind of break it down. It's build that foundation of what's working, not working, et cetera. And then to layer that in around that, you start talking to your team, you start talking to your customers, you start building hypotheses. As you do those conversations, as you dig into the business, as you look at data, you start to understand where you believe your quick wins are. You start to focus on executing those quick wins. And then over time, you start building hypotheses for longer term bets that you can make.
So. Makes sense. At IQ, and I'm not sure if it was the case, I've not researched that actually prior to the conversation. Were you the first VP marketing, or was there a VP marketing before? So did you catch like a trend that was already moving and lots of activities were on, the team is on, the people have been recruited?
Yeah, it's a great question. A
complete clean slate.
Yeah, so there was a person in the role before I got here, and we do have a CMO who's fantastic by the name of Kelly. So Kelly brought me on to sort of help bring the next phase of growth. I would probably summarize it by saying what got Haiku to its current stage of growth and success is likely not what's going to enable that scale and growth for the next phases of our journey here. So really my mission, what I learned very early on, is we were running very much a traditional lead gen playbook when I joined Haiku. Nothing wrong with that. Very common. Anyone listen to this, like that is pretty much more than likely, especially in earlier stage startups, that is what you're going to likely walk into. So what I started to observe was we were spending a lot of money to generate a lot of quote unquote like email addresses.
Yeah.
And that could be through syndication programs, like content downloads from our website, webinars, event leads. The conversion though to opportunity or pipeline was suboptimal. Wasn't unusual from what I've ever seen, but it wasn't super optimal. So here's the trend that we started to see and what we noticed very early on is while we've successfully started generating more leads every quarter, and almost think of it like, let's just say Q1 last year, we generated 1,000 leads. Q4 last year, we generated, let's say 5,000. So yes, cumulatively, marketing, if you're basing all your goals around MQL or lead creation, we're smashing it. The challenge was when you look at opportunity creation, ultimately like your ability to connect what you're doing to revenue, it basically stayed flat. Hypothetically, and I'm making all these numbers up, if we generate 1,000 leads in Q1, we only generate 100 ops.
Yep.
Spitballing numbers. Ironically though, or conversely, then when you look at Q4, we generated 5,000 leads, but we still only generated 100 ops. So my point and what I learned very quickly in my role was we were not going to gain the efficiency or the scale necessary if we just continue to focus on creating quote unquote email addresses. So we're very much in the middle of sort of shifting from a very traditional cast a broad net to a broad ICP to a far more defined, here are key plays that we're going to go run. Here's the key audiences that we're going to try to market and be more relevant and personal to. And then we're going to try to use a mix of more traditional demand capture strategies like paid search, review sites, and things of that nature, or supplementing with very targeted outreach via email, paid social ads, remarketing, things of that nature. And trying to combine the power of both of those engines as opposed to like just relying on lead gen.
So is that the 30-day assessment? So I like the fact you've got a data-driven observation that kind of lead to action. So if we were to break that down in a 30, 60, 90 days, because again, you know, as you say, you come to me with a 30, 60, 90 days, and I'm a big sucker for KPIs, OKR. And I appreciate when someone comes to a role. I mean, how can they know? How can they know what's not working?
You
know,
you
discover all those things through the interview process. Yeah. But so if you were to break down that fantastic thing that you just went through, how do you do it over the 30, 60, 90?
Yeah, I think of it this way. So for 30 days, it's meet with key members of your team. That's really like your first week or two. And you're going to meet with key members in your team, in your department, across the org.
Yeah.
I like to identify, like as I go through that exercise, I like to identify who are my champions are going to be. And you know, I might have to revise that list over time. But those are going to be people that are going to, I know I can go to for support. I can go for guidance. I might be able to use them as champions for like pilot programs in the future, things like that. I like to supplement that with who do I think my objectors will be? It could be like, hey, it's someone in sales. And as many people probably know, sales and marketing don't always have the tightest relationship for a lot of valid reasons. So I might identify certain objectors or people I perceive to be an objector. And then my focus is how am I going to change their tune? And really my mindset is how do I start to identify things that could help them? And I specifically ask questions around like, hey, what are things I can do for you? Are there specific quick wins or are there focus areas that, well, I'm not going to come out necessarily and say, hey, Katarina, like, I don't think you like marketing or I'm not sure you're a big fan. Where can I best help you? And then my focus is going to be how do I go and start to deliver on those things in order to try to win you over, if you will. So that's the first bucket in the 30 days. The next bucket is talk and listen to customers. There's a variety of ways you can do this. You can join sales calls. You can listen to sales calls via different tools like Chorus or Gong or all the different platforms out there. Or you can actually just reach out. Like what I did is I also reached out to our CS team. I said, hey, give me 5 or 10 customers that you believe are willing to talk. And let's just, I want to have conversations with them. I just want to start to inundate myself with the customer base. And I'll admit up front, I am not very technical, and this is a very technical business that I'm helping market, but I'm just listening for words. I'm looking for trends. I'm looking for why customers chose Haiku, because that's the type of language I'll use in marketing. That's the type of language that I would like to see eventually be replacing current copy on our website, things like that. Another way, by the way, you could do this in the early days, your first 30 days, could be using tools like Winter, and you could just run tests or surveys to broad audiences through the focus groups they can help set up, either for website copy. You could do it for like understanding buyer preferences. So that's a lower friction way to get some customer insight as well, if people are looking for like another idea. That's bucket two. Bucket three is just, you know, talking specifically to your team. So if you're leading a team, it's your direct reports. What has worked from their perspective? What hasn't worked? How do you start building a hypothesis? So the reason I do that is like, I'm already starting to take notes day one of like Pete's hypothesis, if you will. That sounds really bad, but it's like, here's what I'm learning. Here's what I think it means. But let me go validate over the next couple weeks through additional conversations and looking at the data. And then really the last bucket that I start doing in those first 30 days, and usually it's week three and four, is I start mapping out what I believe the short-term plays need to be based on those conversations. And in some cases, I try to identify one or two plays I can start executing either on my own or with the team. Those are the first 30 days. 60 days in, I start looking at the team itself in conjunction with those hypotheses, what I'm learning, and where I start to think the business needs to go based on, again, what I'm observing. Mm-hmm. I continue to talk to customers. That's something that should never stop. Although I might talk less now and start listening more to more calls, right? Like I put it on the background and I just work. That tends to be how I do it, by the way. It's just easier.
That's cool.
Time-wise. And then throughout that, I'm still assessing the plan. So usually about 60 days in, at the end of 60 days, typically the way I like to work is that's when I start to have a plan that I feel good about that I can start to present, if you will, to my boss, to an executive team. And that's about what I did here. I think I was about 45 days in here. I felt comfortable enough to at least say like, here's my beliefs about where the business is. Here's where I believe we should be focused on. And what I use that as in those first 45 or 60 days is like the pulse check. How do people react to what I'm proposing? Is one of my hypotheses way off? Is somebody getting like that reaction of like, whoa, P, like that might not be exactly. And again, the purpose there is like, I got to establish credibility early on. If I'm way off base and I'm not establishing that credibility, it's going to be hard to recover, right? First impressions do matter. So then really the last 90 days or last 30 days there of a 90-day plan is now, once I start to get that pulse check, I'll revise the plan as I see, like as I think is necessary. And then usually what I do, the first step in those last 30 days is I start then presenting that plan to my team and get their feedback. What am I missing? What would you change? What would you adjust? Really, I use that first kind of phase, if you will, of just they're my next round of like validation. Yep. If those two kind of validation points go forward pretty well, I finalize the plan and then I start getting the team to execute. So think of it as like all of a sudden now it's shifting the button and it's execute to short-term wins. And as we're executing wins, then it's all about how do we start to communicate internally to our different partners in sales, CS, whomever it might be, on what we're doing, why, here's the plan. If they have additional feedback, we'll incorporate it into the plan, but we're going to start going because time is, you know, time can be an enemy if you don't move quick enough. And as I said to everyone here, even when I was here, let us just start going and we'll adjust as we go, as we learn. It's about aligning the team to a plan. And really, I'd say the last bucket is as you start executing, you'll start understanding based on your talent assessment, do you have the right people? Do you need to maybe go hire specialists to do paid media or graphic design, whatever it might be. So usually as you start executing, at least what I found is within those first 90 days, you start to have a pretty good gauge at that point of team-wise, like who are your strengths? Where are your weaknesses? Do you need to augment your team with talent? Maybe you have to, like, you know, you might have to replace someone long-term or maybe it's short-term. So that's, if I oversimplify, 30, 60, 90 is kind of how I like to think about it. And candidly, that's very much how I approached it here at Haiku.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Without making it awkward, and because I appreciate some of your colleagues may tune in and listen to the conversation, so without any specific example, is there anything that can slow you down? Because, you know, when you go through it, Pete, this is a lot, right? When you went through the 30 days, I'm like, well, I know people that can probably do that in 60 days, you know, and budget touch a bit, you know. I like the fact that you're saying I'm listening to the calls, recording when I'm doing some other stuff. So it seems that you've got a way to really go through a lot of information and in a very effective way. But what could be the, maybe not the blocker, but the breaks on that? And I'm not talking about IQ in particular, because it seems that you are where you want to be within 90 days. You've not been blocked and all your colleagues are absolutely fantastic. But, you know, could it be people in your team? You mentioned the sales team. I mean, we get that a lot. You know, sales team, marketing team that's really seeing eye to eye. So, but I'd like to hear it from you and from your 20 years of experience. You know, what could be the blocker as a net new VP of marketing and also items that can slow you down in that process?
Yeah. So I think it's trying to please everyone early on and allowing, you got to be careful when you're taking in so many inputs from so many different conversations you're having, et cetera. If you are challenged with the ability to bring focus on what you believe are the right quick wins or big bets to focus on initially, the challenge you could very well run into is you build a laundry list of like 37 things you need to do, which, I mean, we all have plenty of stuff that we would love somebody to help us with, right? It's the nature of life in general. I'm sure my wife has 57 things she'd love for me to do around the house. It comes down to prioritization. And I would say the key thing for me, and I think I say this to every team I've had, at least in my last two jobs with Alice and now at IQ, is I'm not going to pretend I'm be the best boss or the most perfect boss. I'm not, but I'm very ruthless about prioritization. It's all about how do we focus as a team? And we're going to pick a couple bets and those are the bets we're going to execute. And when I see people stumble, or at least when I feel like I've stumbled in the past, it's because I was trying to do too many things all at once. So I think you should absolutely have conversations. I don't think you should shy away from having conversations. I don't think you should shy away from getting feedback on what people think they need help with and things of that nature. But what you have to be really smart about is identifying your own hypothesis of where you would hedge your bets. And then maybe you do that pulse check earlier. So if you're concerned, like you're not sure you have the right bets, et cetera, whoever your boss is, sit down with your boss and say, like, here are my hypotheses. Here's all the things I've heard. Here's what I believe we should focus on, and just pulse check. And if you have a really good boss, that boss is going to help you narrow it down. I've also seen scenarios where you might not have the strongest boss. And if you don't, maybe you can find a peer, or maybe you can go to the CEO if you're in a smaller startup, or maybe you can go to the COO.
Yes.
And just use that as a pulse check for, are you on the right track? And I think that can give you the confidence of, all right, like now I can move. And if you're getting pushback from Katarina or P or Jim or whomever it is, you can always kind of revert back to, hey, I already spoke to Bob and Bob was good. Like I'm moving.
Yeah.
If that helps, that's how I like to think about it. But the truth is there's a thousand things that could go wrong. Welcome to life.
Yeah, it could be having no data. I mean, it's interesting because listening to you speaking about the 30, 60, 90 days play, is our play for the first 3 months of engaging with a client is very much similar. You know, you've got to listen to what's going on. But you mentioned something that is very important here, and we see that a lot, is how do you act and decide on data versus perception? You know, oh, John thinks that to sort it out, we need to do it that way. Or John thinks that the issue is that versus, well, do we actually have data?
Data-wise, the way I like to start with data is I like to work with the team, or I try to do it myself. Now, fortunately, because I've done it enough times that I can sort of navigate it a little bit quicker than I used to, but there was a time this was hard, but I like to first separate quote unquote a opportunity and lead funnel by inbound or hot leads versus outbound or like non-hot leads. So I would define this as a hot lead would be anything that comes from like your website, contact us, demo request, free trial, maybe you have a PLG motion. The reason I like to separate those is in theory, those are hand raisers. Those are high intent buyers. Those should have significantly higher conversion rates. Then conversely, all those like, and I mentioned this earlier when I was doing my assessment, that other batch of leads and or measurements I like to look at is all the webinars and events. And typically, by the way, especially when you're partnering with sales, these are all the activities that your sales team wants help with, right? Do a bunch of events. Let's go. Why aren't we at this event? Why aren't we doing this? Let's go do a lunch seminar. And, you know, a lot of teams to satisfy and be like a good partner in marketing will just do those things. And by the way, I'm not saying you shouldn't. Oftentimes sales has a really good pulse, and I want to give sales credit. They usually have a really good pulse on the customer and things that they should do. But the reason I like to separate those things, at least based on my experience, I've consistently always seen, hypothetically, for example, the lead to opportunity conversion rate for hot leads, let's say that's 10 to 15% on average. Conversely, I've seen lead to opportunity conversion rates on non-hot leads to be anywhere from 0.05% up to like at most, maybe 3 or 4%. Yeah. The challenge is if the majority of your engine's built on the latter, that can get really hard and really expensive to scale. By the way, though, if you're an early stage startup, so if you're pre-seed or A, you're probably not getting a huge influx of hot leads. So you got to rely on that outbound motion. So another thing that you do have to take into account is what stage you are in, how healthy your inbound engine is. Because if you have less inbound volume, then you're going to have to rely more on that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That just means doing a lot of what many marketers in particular probably used to, doing MQL waterfalls, reverse waterfalls, and then trying to optimize for metrics like CPL, cost per lead, and things like that. But what you will likely find is similar discovery I found, which is at some point, it's hard to scale that engine because you are, in essence, pushing messages out to an audience that may not be interested in buying to you right then and there, right? So just because I attended your webinar doesn't mean I'm ready to be sold to. And the issue is you do a lot of those activities start to add up, especially if you're bringing in influencers or third parties that bring credibility to those events. And before you know it, you spent a lot of money, you've gotten a lot of leads, but your sales team hates you because none of them are converting. And that's unfortunately sort of the trend. Not to say Haiku did anything wrong, because they've done a lot of great stuff here. And our conversion rates tend to be on the better side across the board. My personal challenge here is I need to try to blend some of that demand capture and inbound with the pretty decent foundation we have with outbound today.
Have you ever been in the situation where, you know, you listen to call, and I would suspect that you listen to good calls, so probably the calls of when you know that opportunity turned into business and we met with the right people, their ICP and all that. I'm sure you also listen to bad calls, the ones that are not converting. Have you ever been in a situation where you know, your head in your hands and thank God, you know, I think we're not doing a great job from a sales perspective. And I guess, you know, how do you, it's maybe a tough question because it's political, but how do you do as a newcomer in marketing to potentially go to sales and say, hey, I think we may have to change the sales playbook here, guys.
Because— yeah. So I was really close with our sales leadership team in my last role at Alice. And if I had those types of concerns, I would typically go to either that reps manager and I would just share the call like, hey, I listened to this call. It felt a little off or something like that. You might want to take a listen. And curious, like if you have any takeaways yourself and just see how they react. You know, another option is I've seen people or I've witnessed some people raising it to like the sales VP or the sales director and with a similar type of approach. Now, I tend to be very outspoken in this stuff just because I look at it as like, hey, it's a business. And I think especially in startups, you need to move fast. When I was in a bigger company where it was a lot more political,
yeah,
I'd say that I walked the lines a lot closer, to be candid. And I wanted to respect the different levels. And candidly, I was also a lot lower on the totem pole, if you will. So it's just a level of respect. Like I didn't want to go around a lot of people. So I would typically raise it to like the sales manager that I might be close with. But that sales manager is four levels below the sales VP in this big division. So have I listened to calls where I'm like, ooh, I'm not sure that's the best? Sure, 100%. You know, and the fun joke I would make is if you're in marketing and anyone listening to this will probably agree with me, everyone has an opinion on how to do your job. It's sort of like the running joke that all marketers have. And we've kind of all learned to accept it. And I just try not to lose sleep on it because the reality is a lot of it is subjective and marketing itself by default. There is no necessary right or wrong way to do it. And it's about knowing your customer and every customer is different. And every industry is different. Everyone's going to react to things differently. I think of sales very much the same way. It's, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but unless you're picking up the phone and selling deals yourself, I try to balance the line
of course,
I'm not going to like go and throw someone on the bus unless I'm willing to go pick up the phone and do it myself. I tried sales very early in my career and it's not for me. I don't like rejection. And God bless my wife who's in sales and she's a fantastic channel and sales professional. And it's probably why we blend so well is because we're just not in that regard. But truthfully, I've listened to her calls. I've run BDR teams in past lives. It is a incredibly difficult job. So I will just raise things up for people to listen to. And I kind of try to keep the line there, to be candid.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. You know, it's unfortunately, particularly when you go to early stage or scale up stage. You know, we've seen scale up stage where there is a big requirement to have lots of salespeople very quickly. We need 50 salespeople in the next 3 months, right? Unless you are extremely well networked or you've got the best recruiter in the world, out of 30, you probably would have a few bad apples. The question is, how do you identify them? And I like what you are saying because your approach is really much about helping versus, you know, finding out and pointing the finger and going on a witch hunt. So that I think that's the right approach.
Yeah, what I don't believe in is having marketing and sales like passing blame to each other.
Yeah.
I don't believe in it. We're one team and somewhere along the line that gets lost sometimes. And I've been part of those environments where it's like something doesn't go well. You forget that you're one team. And then like you spend more time battling internally than you do battling competitors externally. And that I just don't get that. So my viewpoint, I'm very opinionated. I have no problem sharing my opinion, which can be a good thing and a bad thing, by the way. I'm learning to like temper that down myself a little bit because I'm more of like a gut feel. And if my gut feel is like there, I'll just tell you. But one thing I've worked very hard on with a coach on the side for really both my personal life and my professional life is there are different points of view. That point of view might be right. That point of view might be wrong. And by the way, there may not be a right or wrong answer. Sometimes you have to kind of run both and see which does better. So my job is to sort of raise things if it doesn't feel right or just get someone's opinion. And if they tell me, Pete, like mind your own P's or Q's or I think this is fine, then sure, let's go. But if I look at the data later and that data doesn't necessarily jive with their decision versus maybe what I shouted out, I might then go to like my boss or I might go to their boss and say, hey, I did raise the results of X don't really line up to what, or kind of line up to what I was worried about, I would suggest maybe you dig a little deeper here. And by the way, like, here's how I can help. And I would maybe try to offer up help. So it's not just like crying wolf. It's
sure.
Here's what I think I can do to help you as well.
It's human relationship. You know, you've got people who are extremely accountable and professional and will say, you know what? Yeah, listen to it. I agree with you. I need to work on that. Let's do something. You've got some of us, no, it's perfectly fine. Who are you to tell me? Well, their problem is more that they've been told and you are from marketing and not from sales. And technically, this is the guy from marketing. But you are right. They probably would think, you know, Peter should do that. Pete should focus on that or whatever. This is how I would do it if I was Pete. But I also do believe that if you take it, you can give it. You know, if you can take feedback, it's okay to give feedback. There is a way to give feedback. There is a way for everything. You know, you can take a sentence and make it sound extremely offensive or neutral or extremely positive. You know, you've got to have a bit of emotional intelligence to put things in context. But I like what you are saying about like that sort of circle of safety.
Yeah. And
I think that's so important because we see it, not joking, probably in 30% of the case with our clients, if not a little bit more, where it's like you are in the crossfire between two units and usually sales and marketing. And you're like, come on, guys, why don't you just get on, shake hands, agree a plan. Everybody takes responsibility. We write it down. And then we go. We're wasting time. You know, all those emails, all those things, those calls, the fight. Then it's the sleepless night that are probably linked to it because you think about it and it just play on you. And
yeah, there's two things I've learned. There's two things I've learned the hard way that I'd offer up to anyone listening to this. The first, and it's something my wife has always said to me, and I'm sure she's saying it to me because I'm not always the best at it. I'll own this myself. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. And that has been a hard lesson for me, candidly. And I have misstepped way too many times that I care to count. But that is something I have actively tried to get better at through coaching. I would record some of the meetings I do with my team or videos I'll record for the team. And I'll share it off to like my wife or to a coach. And they'll give me feedback. And I'm just trying to get better and mindful because you always have room to grow. And I can tell you, like, my natural, I'm Italian and Portuguese. I'm naturally just blunt and to the point. And for some, that's great. For others, I've learned, to your point, that doesn't always, they're not going to necessarily respond well. So that's one point. The other is, I think it's very important to understand that getting stuff done, even if it fails, is more important than just sitting on your hands and not doing anything because you're afraid to make a mistake. I don't want to be caught in a situation where I'm trying to defend why my team's done nothing for 90 days. That is absolutely like worst case scenario. And I've made that mistake very early in my career twice, where it was like paralysis by over analysis. And especially in the startup roles I've more recently had, the focus has been move, get learnings, develop hypothesis. It's a lot easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to explain to yourself why you can't get off the ground. And by the way, you lose credibility if you can't get off the ground. So
absolutely.
If I leave people with anything, those two things, I think, don't lose sight of that. If whether you're early in your career or late in your career, there's always ways to adjust your tone or your approach. No one's perfect.
Yeah, in the same bag as you, you know, I can't recall exactly how many times, but I don't have enough fingers on my foot and hands to remember, you know, it's just saying to people, look, I'm sorry about how I come across. I had to tell you, sometimes there is a bit of passion because you care. But you then realize after it's done, maybe 5 minutes later, I say, oh, maybe I didn't come across the right way. Maybe I should go back and just apologize for the form. I may not apologize for the content. I may rework the content, but I just want to apologize for the form. That happens to me too often. And I should probably do more coaching and controlling. But yeah, I mean, it's part of what you do. And I like what you're saying about trying. It's better to fail while trying than fail while doing nothing. So, you know, if you're trying to challenge the status quo, you're trying to do something, you're trying to be creative, you're trying to come up with something, you should get encouragement. You know, it's entrepreneur, you're always good. You've got to do things and, you know, and you've got to encourage people because if not, you stop the creative juice, right?
Yeah.
If I shut you down because you try something new in my team, and are you going to try again? No, you probably have one shot, two shots. And then, you know, people are like, well, that's not really working for me. So I'm going to stop. And I think to encourage that creativity and that safety is how do you get these people to say, look, this is okay. What have we learned from it? All right, let's add that to the don't.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a list of don't, a list of do. That's cool. We move on.
Totally agree. I have a very wise friend that once said to me, all right, he shared like a recording with me or something. It was a podcast. I'll apologize. I don't remember where I heard it from, but it was a story of this individual interviewed all these elderly individuals. And basically the question was like, what is one thing, if you look back at your life, that you wish you could take back. And consistently, the common thread was not taking action or like not doing something that I should have done. And I like to parallel that to how I operate now in my job, which is, listen, I've been doing this a long time and I have imposter syndrome almost daily. I question my plan all the time. I question things all the time. But the thing that gives me peace of mind and helps quiet that noise is when we execute things, we get learnings, and I can take those learnings and start to have really honest dialogues about what we're learning. If I didn't do those things and I just let the anxiety, imposter syndrome, and self-doubt take over, which we all have, and anyone that says they don't have, God bless them. I'd love to talk to them and understand how they've mastered that. If I could offer anything, it's just go do something, try to get something off the ground. Quick wins matter. Quick wins are key. The quicker you can get things done, even if they bomb, terrible word to use, but even if they fail, you're still learning. You still have a good story to tell. And then the question is, all right, how would you do it differently? And that's a great dialogue. Like, it's a great conversation to have with someone of like, hey, I did this. It didn't work exactly the way we thought, but here's how I'm going to change it up. And now you've just had a 20 or 30 minute conversation where that person's leaving that call going like, all right, this individual gets it, working hard, and is going to keep making changes to get better versus here's Pete. Pete's been talking for 60 days. Pete's done nothing besides meetings and talking. I'm not sure Pete's the right person.
Yeah, you want action. And I think it's important, you know, when you mentioned the win, I think it's having personal win and team win. When you work with someone and you can see the changes with that individual. I mean, personally, as an individual, I take a lot of pleasure from probably that's where I get my best dose of dopamine or oxytocin or whatever it's called that comes through the body that makes you feel good when you that feel good button when you see someone actually changing and performing, and that's the good thing. So yeah, do small wins are extremely important. But speaking about small win and coming back to the topic of sales and bring it back to like the SDR, BDR. So stepping back a little bit from all those great things, you know, in most of the playbook that we see, a change of role is a trigger for receiving a call, receiving an email and say, hey, Pete, just understand that you just joined that company and this and that, and we do this and we do that and we can help you. What's the right timing, Pete, to not honor you, piss you off? Because I think some people lack that emotional intelligence of understanding, you know what, calling Pete 1 week after I joined that company.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to buy your stuff, right? You probably need at least 2 months, 3 months. And then when you engage with Pete, don't go into your pitch straight away.
Yeah, here's how I look at it. So if you have an existing relationship with me and you want to reach out and just like sort of put the warmer out there, I think that's a smart, I would commend that play. Otherwise, I would suggest investing in intent data tools. And I think intent, we could debate a whole nother topic at another day.
Oh yeah, we've got an hour off intent.
Because you know, there's pros and cons to intent tools out there. But the reason that at least I believe in it when you're doing outbound outreach is to try to get a little bit smarter about the audiences you're going after and the potential readiness of those audiences. So again, the way I would look at this is if you have a relationship with me or I'm a former customer and you've moved companies and now you're trying to sell me at another customer, I would generally say probably at least give them 30 days to breathe a little bit. Anything under 30 days just seems a little aggressive.
Why don't ask? You know, you could ask as well and say, look, I know that you just joined the company. I remember when I started my job, you know, I am your account manager. So I wanted to introduce myself, but you've got to tell me when the time is right, right? I don't want to get onto you.
You can do that. Another really interesting play I saw somebody did with me was like, hey, I know five people are also starting new jobs, similar to you, VPs of marketing or marketing directors, leaders, you know, interest and seeing if I can coordinate a call with you. Like that, I would respond really favorably to. Like,
The community build up.
Yeah, like helping bridge connections, helping bridge a network. I think those types of strategies are going to get a lot of response. If you're just trying to hook and sink me quick, I don't know if that makes sense. Hook and net, reel me in, I think is a better way. You know, anything under 30 days, hell no. Like if I was a CFO, I would fire that marketing leader real quick if they're already buying tech that fast. It just seems odd to me. I don't even know if you have enough time to fully build your hypothesis and fully vet your plans yet. So I would say it has to typically probably be more of warmers to maybe your point, asking some questions, things like that in those first 30 days. And then, yeah, sure, you can start putting people through the warmers and all the different outreaches that you would do. I was just spitballing on that. So,
I mean, you know, it fascinates me. I do receive call myself, and it's just the way things are structured today. You know, people just going straight to the pitch, not trying to understand things. And it's interesting. People don't even tell you why you. you know, sometimes it's or why your company is kind of an interesting. People need to do their research. And if they call you without doing their research, not knowing that you start a job, that's very basic. You know, it's a quick look on LinkedIn. It's so easy to have a little bit of a something to say for a nice, warm introduction. It's like, look, I know you're, I kind of understand your context, but this is what I'm trying to achieve, right? Let's get going. But yes, sometimes people kind of... And you're actually, the Tyler, you're just the next guy. No matter what, you're just the next guy in the list.
Yeah. The one pet peeve I do have is like when I announced it, quote unquote, on like LinkedIn or social media, and I'll like accept an invite or a friend, and all of a sudden I'm getting instant pitch. Like I'll admit that to me is egregious. Like I already have a hard enough time managing that inbox on LinkedIn, and I message in stuff that I don't want to miss. But in large part, it's because like every other message is a pitch. So if anyone's out there listening and trying to figure out like how to better market to marketers, my best advice would be figure out something you can offer me of value that's going to help me either connect with someone or do my job as an early marketing leader or as a marketing leader. Start there. Or, you know, listen to this, find out I have little kids. Like maybe you can hook me in something that way. But to your point, spend a little bit of time getting to know me or show that you understand like what marketing leaders care about or marketers in general. Give me something. And then you probably got me. Like you'll get my response. I can't promise you I buy, but at least you'll get a response.
I give you 50 minutes. I'm going to give you an advice if you're listening about how to reach the CEO. I had one on LinkedIn literally on Monday. You know, the guy seems to be a good guy. He's got lots of great experience in great company. He sent me a LinkedIn message. So I accept him. I'm like, you know, that's kind of interesting. He sent me a note saying, hey, we are such and such company. Why don't you go on our website, check what we are doing, and then you come back to me and we book a meeting. And I responded to him. And I said, look, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to be rude. I tend to be quite humble, but I've got a company to run. Why don't you tell me what you could do for me, right? Yeah. And, you know, you save me time. Why should I walk to get a meeting with you? For me, that doesn't really make sense. If you would have done your research, this is, I don't know if it's a lazy or if we think it's working or if someone saw that on LinkedIn because some person said this is the way you should do it, but give me the information I need to make a decision. Be to the point. Mm-hmm. Tell me? Why my organization? Why should we meet? The value of time is like you are a VP of marketing. You probably don't have enough time in the day. You probably live your day with like 15, 20 items on your to-do list. And it's the same for everyone. You know, particularly if you're working with A, B, C companies, we don't have time. Time is our most important currency. So it's kind of frustrating for all the SDR that are listening. Try to make your prospect save time in the process. Give them the information they need. Cut the chase. Right? It's tell us what we need to know and tell us, ask us if it makes a difference and if it doesn't, move on. But
and just remove friction. Like if you have a self-tour, give me the self-tour and then know, but don't do that in the first outreach. Like if I don't know who you are, the analogy I always used to use when I was at Alice and we'd have like prospective customers trying to buy a gifting platform and their whole goal was like, hey, we just want to start blasting people with gift cards or gifts to get meetings was like, hey, if you had a partner that you were interested in, would you go and buy them a $100 gift card? You've never talked to them. You've never met them. You buy a, let's just say a movie gift card and you just walk up to them and you hand it to them. Would you do that in real life? And if you wouldn't do that exact activity in real life, then why would you do it digitally?
Yeah.
So that would just be my challenge now. And then I would challenge you to think back, okay, so like in that same scenario, you have a individual that you're interested in, you want to go out with them or you'd hope that they'd go out with you. Odds are you're going to try to strike up a conversation. You're going to try to learn about their interests. You might find a mutual friend that knows them, right? All of a sudden, you're trying to get some intel. You might Google search them. We all know that happens now. So all of a sudden, you start getting intel. So then you start to figure out, like, how can you make yourself more relevant when you do that outreach? Now, you know, bar dating is a little bit different. But let's just assume this is more of like trying to court someone outside of a bar scene, if you will. I'm going to take a lot of those activities that were just mentioned. And I think you can apply that same logic to just general prospecting and general outreach as well. So for what it's worth, that helps. That's sort of how I've always tried to frame it in the old gifting days I had. And I would say those customers, the ones who had the most success with gifting platforms were the ones that used tools like intent data. They tried to better understand the readiness of a prospect, a contact, or an account. And then they timed their outreach and they timed the messages of that outreach based on what that data was feeding to them. And that would be the same logic of like, I go to Google, I understand that Pete loves to live near the water. He He's got two little kids. He's likely interested in these things. I love to try to get out on a meeting or a date with Pete. Here's the things I would probably hook him in with.
Yeah.
And I just draw hypothesis and I do my thing from there. Right. And then your first two messages might bomb. The third one might hit. Now, all of a sudden, you know, when you find profiles like Pete, this is probably the outreach that might work.
It's all about preparation and research. A similar analogy. We're going a little bit out of the topic here, but I was speaking with one of my guy and going to a physical event. But how do you prepare for that? Well, I say, well, I look at the list of people that will be there and I will start to put a LinkedIn document together. First of all, I want to know what they look like. So when I see them, I know who they are. And then I'm going to work on my first 30 seconds, right? My first 30 seconds is how can I find something that is genuinely either something that I've got in common or something smart that I can tell them about their market if I don't have something in common with them, okay? Because, you know, when you go face-to-face, particularly post-COVID, it was kind of awkward to go to people. They're like, we're supposed to spoke, we're supposed to shake hands, we hug, what do we do? But I think you've got that thing where you see someone, it's like people seeing their favorite celebrity, but don't know what to tell them. But it's a favorite person in the world. They're like, oh, God, this is Michael Jordan. What do you tell Michael Jordan if you see Michael Jordan? I've already rehearsed that. I know what I would tell him. And it may be something, but if you are prepared for the scenario and if you visualize them, then it makes your life very easy. It makes it less awkward for you. It makes it less cold. It makes your body language act better, your intonation sound better. But most importantly, it makes the person that you're trying to make a connection with much better because it's natural. It feels a little bit like, you know, in the Hollywood movie, when you see someone doing it properly, it's because, you know, you've got to prepare. So, but yeah, the preparation and a bit of personalization or tailorization, shall I say, is probably critical. But we're out of the topic. So 30, 60, 90 days, I've learned a lot of interesting thing. And I hope that for the marketing leader that have listened to us, they also got some good nuggets of information. I hope that all the SDR, BDR listening to us are now getting that emotional intelligence of knowing what's happening in the life of a marketing professional starting a new job and will adapt their conversation to that. But if anyone wants to pursue the conversation with you, Pete, I know that I believe that you are a member of Pavilion and some other communities.
Yeah.
But you know, someone wants to pursue the conversation and potentially speak about HiQ and how you could help the organization. Yeah. What's the best way to get hold of you, Pete?
Yeah, I say just DM me on LinkedIn or I'm in Pavilion. I'm in all those, probably most of the marketing community. So like Pete community, Pavilion, the demand community that the metadata team runs. Those are probably the three I'm most active in, plus LinkedIn. But LinkedIn's 9 out of 10 times probably your best bet. Just please on the first touch, don't hard pitch me.
Just remember that, guys. Well, look, Pete, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. So thank you so much for coming.
Thanks all.
You've been listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Looking to grow your pipeline? Download the free SDR handbook from Operatix for insider tips and expert advice on how to launch, grow, and manage a successful sales development team. Head to operatix.net/SDR-handbook/ to download now.